we think that when we make a decision, it's supposed to feel really good. Like, it's not supposed to feel scary. It's supposed to feel right. Like, yes, this is the right thing to do. And that's a misconception. I think when we are moving towards something that is really calling us to grow in a bigger way, it's going to feel scary.
Resistance does not mean to stop, because you can face external resistance. You can also face this internal resistance. And I think what you're saying is that you got to lean into that. Welcome back to the Next Peak Podcast. I am your host, Clint Herndon. This is the podcast where we help you redefine success and achieve goals that are actually important to you based on research and real life stories. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Dina Cataldo. Dina and I were introduced through a mutual friend who is an attorney and said, "Hey, I listened to both of your podcasts. You both put out great content. I think you guys should talk." And so that was basically the email that we got as an introduction. So Dina and I jumped on a call, had just an absolute blast talking to each other, kind of finding that we had some similar speed bumps in our career trajectory. And we decided to kind of venture off and do things that had more meaning to us. And so it's going to be a really fun conversation that we have here today. And welcome to the show, Dina Cataldo.
Thank you so much. I loved your intro. It's like, hey, let's talk about things that actually matter to you. I like that.
Well, I think so often we think we have these goals that are just really not that important to us personally, because somebody else told us that it was important.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. So I want to give some background on you, Dina. So you're a life coach for attorneys, a criminal prosecutor, and the host of Be a Better Lawyer podcast.
Yes.
And you've also got a great website, dinacataldo.com.
Thank you.
I love the tagline too. I help lawyers master their time, grow their business, and have more fun.
Yes, because we need more fun. We all need more fun.
So you say that like, you know, attorneys don't know how to have fun or something.
You know what? We know how to have fun, but we do it in ways that aren't always the most helpful or healthy. And a lot of it might involve alcohol. I remember in law school, it was almost like the school expected us to drink a lot because there was always security outside of the events to make sure nobody went driving. And I remember there was substance abuse in law school. And so there's this whole culture of it's expected to release stress using substances. And so, yeah, we can have lots of fun. And it's often in a way that's not beneficial to us, the people around us, our business, and growing who we are as people. And it's not even just lawyers, like it's culture. Like if you watch television, if you pay attention to any pop culture in Sacramento, where I live, there's a bar everywhere, right? Like every other place is a bar. And a big part of that is because we just haven't been taught how to deal with some of the stresses that come up in a way that doesn't involve a substance. So that's why I think if we have fun doing business, like we can actually have fun getting out and doing other things without the substances. I mean, all my friends drink, no problem with the drinking every so often, but it's like, hey, I've been there. I've done all the things, done all the drinking, and that I found did not help me with my business. So that's where I'm at with that.
Yeah, for sure. So one of the things that I've been listening to your podcast for a little bit, and I love that all the things that you're teaching to attorneys, you've got a specific audience that you're speaking to in your coaching business and then through your podcast. But I think for our audience, if you're tuning in and you're not an attorney, you're going, oh, well, she coaches attorneys. What am I going to get from this? Hey, hold on. Don't go anywhere, because some of the topics that she's talked about are the willpower problem, making change inevitable, releasing judgment, the power of focus, pursuing happiness. I know you've done time management. I mean, these are all important life skills for literally anybody. The thing that makes you unique is you're able to talk to attorneys because you've lived it. But yeah. I think anybody listening today is going to grab something from this.
Oh, for sure. I mean, all of the tools I use with my clients are tools that we can use on our own You know, they're all tools that we can use every single aspect of our lives, whether it's our business, our relationship, just, you know, trying to feel better during the day. Like those kinds of things, when we work on ourselves, they have a cumulative effect too. So once we start practicing it a little bit in one area of our life, you can just kind of see how it impacts everything. So it's definitely not just for lawyers, and it's definitely not just for, you know, one particular area of your life. It's everywhere.
I definitely want to dive into some of these key topics, but getting back to you becoming a lawyer, there's always a story. Seems like, why did somebody become a lawyer? And I'm going to date myself because it used to be because they watched too many episodes of like Perry Mason or one of these, you know, shows, and they wanted to be the guy who had the zinger, you know, or the guy or the yes. gal who had the zinger in court. What's the story behind you choosing law and particularly criminal prosecution?
You know, it really, the reason I became a lawyer is because all of the people who seem to have a lot of influence in politics seem to have a background in law. And I remember I studied abroad in Cairo, Egypt when I was in college. And I remember watching everything go down. It was right after September 11th. So I was living September 11th from the perspective of someone living in Egypt, which was completely different when I came back, an understanding of how everyone experienced it. But I was watching the news a lot. And, you know, big figure at the time was Hillary Clinton. She was Secretary of State. And I saw how much impact she had in different areas. I don't remember if she was Secretary of State. She was doing something. But I remember thinking, that's influence. Like when you have the ability to speak to somebody who has power in a way that can influence things in a direction that's beneficial. And I saw that she was a lawyer, and I saw that other people who were in positions of power were lawyers. And I thought, okay, well, that's one way to get into the Foreign Service, because I was really interested in foreign policy at the time. And I took that avenue because I thought that was the thing to do. And then when I got to law school, I kid you not, the first year I was like, why did I choose law school? This was the worst decision I could have possibly made. I should be living in Paris, like just having a good time. Instead, I am here spending 18 hours a day studying legal books. What is wrong with me? So I was really close to leaving. But, you know, the competitive part of me, the part that just pushes through, the striver, pushed me through law school. And I chose criminal law more because I just went to the career counselor and they said, oh, well, we have some positions available for work study. Do you like writing? And I said, yeah, okay. And I was in the prosecutor's office. And then I learned what they did because I had no clue, right? It's just like, oh, okay. So I go in and I start reading these police reports and these stories about humans. And it was fascinating. It just drew me in. And along the way, that's when I learned the skills of cross-examining someone and, you know, failing more than not at, you know, keeping organized and, you know, not working too hard. It was impossible. I was working 50 to 70 hours a week, and it was totally impossible with the skill set that I had at that time. I could not manage my caseloads. And so that's part of the reason why I started down the path that I did. It took me a lot longer than just a few years. It took like a decade to get there. But what I really was interested in the criminal profession was just the stories. And you cannot make up what you experience, as you know, like you were on the street, you know, working with, you know, actually having conversations with everyone. I'm getting the third party perspective.
Yeah. It's better than fiction, as they say.
Yeah.
So what's the coolest case you've been a part of? Like looking back, you know, you don't have to give any names.
Coolest
case. But just something that stands out of like, wow, this was such a fun prosecution or something crazy happened in court or something like that.
I have one. It was fascinating. So I was probably a few years into being a prosecutor. It was a felony drug case. It was a drug transaction in which an undercover officer had sold drugs to the defendant I was prosecuting and written the police report. And there was a juvenile who was also involved, who was kind of like a secondhand person who carried the drugs to the defendant, and he was involved. And that at the end of the investigation, what the officer had done, the detective had done, it's taken little Polaroids of everybody, right? Like, here's a Polaroid of the officer. Here's a Polaroid of the defendant. Here's a Polaroid of the juvenile. So I had these like old school Polaroids, which was really neat because, you know, we never see Polaroids. I don't know why they had them. But I hadn't introduced these Polaroids into the projector so that everybody could see them. I held on to them till the very end because I knew that the issue was going to be identity. So I wanted to introduce them into evidence. And so I held on to them. I didn't really do it intentionally, not showing them on the screen, but I held on to them. So I'll get to why that was so cool at the very end. But during this prosecution, the defense called the juvenile, and the juvenile wanted to take the rap for everything and say that it was him and that it was a mistaken identity and that the officer had misidentified the defendant as the juvenile. The juvenile is the defendant. And of course, you know, reasonable doubt, there could, you know, I have to convince all 12 people beyond a reasonable doubt that it's the defendant who's guilty of the crime. So if the defense can just add a little tiny bit of doubt in one person's head, then, you know, the guy gets away. So this was really great because I had asked for help from one of the older, more seasoned prosecutors, like, how do I cross-examine this juvenile? And, you know, juvenile, he's 18 at this point. He was 17 when he got a violation of probation. He'd already taken a rap for being involved with the drugs, having the drugs, but wanting to take the rap, I got to cross-examine him and say, well, you've known this guy for a while, right? And so he, you know, yes, I've known him, and yeah, I would do anything for him. And yes, I've known him for X amount of years, and he knows my family. I mean, all of this, right? And by the end of it, it was almost a Perry Mason moment, right? Like, you don't always get that, or like, you very rarely get it. But by the end, it was so clear he was just taking the stand for his buddy. You know, he was totally lying and he was just taking the stand to try to get his buddy off. And then at the very end, during my closing argument, I showed those Polaroids. And it was so clear that there was no misidentification, that the officer knew exactly who he had sold the drugs to and exactly who the juvenile was. And there was absolutely no, like, you could see it in the faces of the jury as I handed them to the jury and they looked at the Polaroids. It's like their face lit up like, what the heck are we here for? Why are we even like doing this trial? What a waste of time. Like, that's, I could just awesome. See it in their face. So that's one of my favorite prosecutions.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a memorable one for sure. So I'm going to dive into some of the topics that we had discussed. One of the things that you had started to touch on was that as you're getting into prosecution, you start kind of burning yourself out. You're working crazy hours. Were there caution signs that you kind of saw or that you ran through during this time? If you were to look at like the symptoms of your life, you know, were there things that you just ignored and kind of went through?
Yeah, I'd say the drinking was one of them. I drank a lot. And it was really interesting because I didn't think it was a lot because everybody was drinking. Like, you'd go out, everybody was having 3-4 drinks. And, you know, I'm small. I'm 5'2", about 120 pounds. It's like, you give me like one or two drinks, I'm out. But like, everybody else is drinking 3-4 drinks. And so that's where I was at. It was like, oh, okay, well, that's just what you do. That's how you have a good time. That's how you loosen up. And so that was one symptom if I were to look back at it. Another would have been working through things, like working through my plans to go to the gym, like working through plans to spend time with friends, working through anything. Because I already have, and probably a lot of your listeners have, like, if they're listening to this, like, you have a drive to work. Mm-hmm. Like, there, if it's unchecked, it's almost like a substance abuse issue, right? Like, we want to work, we want to succeed. But if we're not really mindful about when we choose to work and we let the work get away from us, then we're not working in our best interest. Because there's a good way to work for us, one that is going to get us to where we want to go in a way that feels really good, in a way that's connected and present. You know, you hear people talking about being present in the moment. And that is a big part of working in a way that feels really good versus striving in a way that puts your health in jeopardy, in a way that is painful to the people around you and is giving you a net negative effect in your life.
Yeah. And as you ignored these caution signs, was there something that ultimately got your attention that I need to change this?
Well, yeah. So I was diagnosed with breast cancer at 29 years old. Mm-hmm. And at 29, it was unbelievable. Like, it was like, really? Like, that happens to people who are way older. Like, mm-hmm. that doesn't happen when you're 29. And this was something that, and this is going to be my public service announcement of the day, especially for anyone, men and women can get breast cancer. So it's important for everybody. But I had noticed that there was a lump in my breast and I had it monitored. Like, it was monitored. I was all over that. And it was not cancerous. I had it biopsied. I had the mammograms. I had the ultrasounds, all that stuff. And they told me it was nothing. The only reason I had it removed was for vanity, because I was like, no, I don't want this here. So when I had it removed, that's when they determined that it was stage 3 cancer. And that cancer, I had to go in for a second surgery and get the rest of it removed, because nobody thought it was cancer until they went in and they took it out. But when I hit 29 and I had cancer, I realized that, well, one of my thoughts was, is I was doing something wrong, which I wouldn't be looking at it that way now. It would be something in a vein like, oh, what can I do differently? But at that point I was like, I'm doing something wrong. I need to change something. Let's just change it all up. Let's just do everything differently. And that was my spark to get me to do things like, okay, well, let me try yoga. You know, that was something I didn't want to do, kind of wanted to do, but didn't want to do because I had a lot of stories about the kinds of people who do yoga and like what I would expect in a yoga studio. So I didn't want to put myself in that situation. And I thought, you know what? I just need to do everything different. What can I do that's just different? And that's what started putting me on this, I guess, decades plus long path of self-discovery and, you know, working differently.
Yeah. One of the things that when we spoke last time that stood out to me is that, you know, when we go through something like this and we kind of take an inventory of life and we're not where we want to be, the knee-jerk reaction is, I've got to change everything. I've got to change careers. I got to change jobs. I need to move to another city. I need to move to another country. Mm. I need to go live on a beach and sell hot dogs. You know, like, whatever.
That was a good idea. I like that.
Yeah. No, right? It's not a bad idea. But what you had told me was, and I'm totally going to butcher this and paraphrasing it, but it was, instead of like finding a job that would make you happy, you wanted to find a way to be happy in your current job. Mm. And yeah. I don't know if you remember that conversation. So if there was more to that thought, kind of fill in the details on that.
You know, I didn't come to that right away. It took me some thinking and really working through some things. Because one of the things, you know, I never had journaled regularly, but every once in a while I'd write down a couple notes, you know, like a quick bucket list or something like that. And I went back through some of my little journal entries when I did a bucket list, and I noticed one thing that kept popping up, which was start a business. And so I thought, okay, well, it's a little scary to me. That's why I'm not doing it. So I should just do it. Right. So of course, obviously it scares me. I should do it. So I started a tea business, right? Like, that was, I was like, what could I do while I'm making good money as a lawyer and explore this idea of starting a business that scares the heck out of me? So I started an online tea business. I learned how to, you know, blend teas. I learned all the things. You know, we were talking about, you were having some green tea. It's like, yes, and I was all about tea. Now I'm drinking coffee. But I started exploring this, and I realized, like, that's when I got into time management and understanding all that. We could talk about that later. But I realized that starting a business wasn't going to make me happier, right? Like, changing my career and starting a business, any business, wasn't going to equal happiness, right? Like, there's so many people who change careers, change offices, change states, you know, whatever it is, change partners. And we think, oh, life's going to be so much better, you know? And I knew this was like not right. And somebody explained this really well. It was Brooke Castillo. She's somebody I follow. And she's a coach who has really talked a lot about this. And she said, it's all of our thoughts about where we are working at that time that are creating how we feel. And when somebody first says this to you, you want to argue with them. You want to tell them, no, you're full of crap. Like, there's no way. I hate my job. I hate the way people treat me. I hate all of the work. I hate this. I hate that, right? Like, our brain just wants to create evidence for how much we dislike this place. Mm-hmm. It's, of course, it's going to be better somewhere else. It has to be, right? Grass is always greener. And when I really started to look at this, I started thinking, okay, well, how do I make myself feel good now? Like, be happy now where I am. Because when I'm in a good place, I actually talked about this on Instagram today, is when I'm coming from a better place, I can make decisions more clearly. I'm not making an emotional decision that, you know, I'm just going to take all of my baggage over to the next job. I'm going to take all my baggage over to the business, the new spouse, the new state, wherever, because I'm going to go wherever I go, right? There I am. Was that Yogi Berra that says, wherever I am, that's where I'll be, you know? Like, you have to really recognize and clear up all the baggage where you are before you can make a clear decision on your next move.
One of the things that you said at the beginning of that story was you pressed into something that was scary to you by starting a business. Why was that important?
That all comes from the yoga. I mean, when I started going to yoga, one of the things that you learn is to hold a pose for an extended period of time. And there's a lot of discomfort with that. And anyone who's familiar with, you know, somebody saying, oh, you should meditate, and you sit down to meditate and you close your eyes and like, I can't do this, you know, and you stop. It's that same discomfort. We have a discomfort with sitting still in something that is new and scary, and we don't know what's going to happen next. Like, our brain kind of goes into this fear mode. And when I was in yoga, they said, okay, well, move towards the fear, right? Move towards the discomfort in the pose. When you're in meditation, move towards the discomfort, sit in the discomfort. And it was the same thing. And the way you do one thing in one part of your life is the way you do anything. And I thought, why am I not sitting in the discomfort of this fear? And later on, I learned it was all my thoughts. Like, there were a ton of thoughts that I had about myself, my abilities, my fear of being seen, my fear of what other people thought, the judgments I had about myself that kept me from starting a business. I didn't see them at the time. I just saw that they were fears. And so I went in and I was like, okay, let's just do it. And once I made a decision and committed, that's when all the brain drama came up. And that's where all of the coaching really started to come in handy, when I started to go into that area of the world. Like, that really made a lot of sense to me. It's like, oh yeah, the fears that I had, they're just thoughts. Like, I just have thoughts about myself and what I'm capable of, and I can defeat them. I can match up against them. I can see them, and then I can overcome them.
Yeah. And that's probably a common thing with attorneys and really anybody in driven background, right? Is whether you're an entrepreneur, obviously you have a lot of experience with attorneys, is that we want to control things, right?
Yeah.
We're drivers, you know, I'm not an attorney, but I'm a CPA, but we drive, you know, we're hard drivers and we like to control the variables. Mm-hmm. And now what you're talking about is pushing into that uncomfortable spot of saying, I'm going to try something that I have no experience in, and it might fail. It, you know, could all these things that can come up. And so a lot of times we just avoid those things in life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to our detriment. I mean, I think we miss out on, you know, I think what you're saying is you explored this other side of life that you hadn't even touched on before.
You know, and this really comes down to, like, we think that when we make a decision, it's supposed to feel really good. Like, it's not supposed to feel scary. It's supposed to feel right. Like, yes, this is the right thing to do. And that's a misconception. I think when we are moving towards something that is really calling us to grow in a bigger way, it's going to feel scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just actually journaling about that yesterday, about how resistance does not mean to stop.
Right.
Because you can face external resistance from your competition, from your friends and family who don't understand, but you can also face this internal resistance, which is, I'm not good enough. Who's going to listen to me? you know, who's going to buy what I'm selling? Why do they want this? Who's going to take this over the competitor? All that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I think what you're saying is that you got to lean into that a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm curious about is when you sit down with these really driven, you know, ambitious people who sometimes neglect themselves, what are some of the common lifestyle issues that they're experiencing when they first come to you and they say, Dina, I need coaching because X, Y, Z?
Yeah. Yeah. When they come to me, a lot of times they are overwhelmed. And at that point, when you're overwhelmed, you can't move. It's almost like you're frozen in place and everything feels really hard, right? Like you're an insect stuck in amber, right? Like they'll come to me and they'll say, you know, I feel like I have to be working all the time. Like I have to be available all the time. And so I start questioning them. I'm like, why? Like, why do you have to be available all the time? Is that true? And they really believe it's true. And then we start questioning it. We start getting into how their mind works. And they realize, oh, it's not true. I had one client who, she loves to cook dinner. And she loves to just have a couple hours with her partner. And she's just like, okay, I want to be able to cook our meal and enjoy our meal. But what I'm doing is I'm checking my email. I have my computer on. I'm looking at the email. I'm going back and forth. And she deals with like billion-dollar deals, right? So she is like on it. She wants to like make sure she's not missing anything. And I said, well, what's happening during those 2 hours? Well, nothing that I couldn't get to later. Like it's just 2 hours. I said, so why don't you just turn off the computer? Mm-hmm. I mean, like just offering those little things, like giving them permission. That's really what it is. It's just saying you have permission to close the computer for 2 hours and have a meal, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can do that. And just another thing is like a lot of my clients don't turn off their notifications. Like, and actually like the biggest benefit I had with one client, cause she just wouldn't do it, was like, okay, go to your notifications right now and turn them off. And she said she feels so much better now because she's done that, you know, it's just like those kinds of things. So that's one area, is the overwhelm and getting permission to just say no. And then there's other areas where they want to grow their practice, but maybe they have some weight holding them down. It could be another partner that they work with, right? Like it could be somebody who they have a lot of friction with. And so they're not having the most productive conversations with them to help move their goal forward. Or maybe they have an employee and they don't know how to talk to their employee. Maybe they shouldn't have the employee at all, but they're putting a lot of energy into their employee instead of their long-term vision of their business. Like they're so wrapped up in one area of their business that they're neglecting the rest of their business.
And so when you sit down with these folks, what are, you touched on a few things like the distractions and the pings and the bings and mm-hmm. all the things that come with a notification. What are some of the things that you kind of give initially to say, hey, here's what's going to help you bring order to chaos in your life?
Yeah. So the very first thing I do with pretty much all of my clients are in this position when they first come to me, but it just depends on how deep they're in, whether it's, you know, no problem at all, or whether they need several sessions to kind of get going. Is like, just audit your time. Like this is something your listeners could do right now. Just audit their time. It's the simplest thing that you can do to help yourself.
And what do you mean by that? Audit your time.
So ask yourself, like, what am I doing during the day? And years ago, I had a coach who offered this up to me, and it was me tracking my time, whether it was how much time or how many times I checked email. How long was I spending on social media? How many hours did I spend watching television or playing on the internet? And how much was I working? How much was I, you know, everything, every little thing I was doing. And I did this for the period of a week. And when I looked at it, I was shocked. And immediately you'll make a difference because you'll see, I had no idea I was spending so much time doing these things that I don't even like that much. They're not even that enjoyable to me. Why am I using my time in this way? Like it's not a renewable resource. Time is something is finite, right? So why are we choosing to ignore how we use it? And I'm not saying like this is one of the things I work with my clients on, and your listeners probably have this issue too. I'm not saying like pack your schedule with work so you get more done, talking about, look at the quality of your, you know, I want to say me time or your renewal time, right? Because you need to renew your resources. You've got to take time to yourself. Take your dog for a walk, have a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, sit, do nothing. Sit outside with your partner and talk with them, or just like read a book. Like those kinds of things, which it sounds so simple, but we resist doing it because we have this thought that we should be doing more for the business. We should be doing more work because we think success equals security. Like, well, if I'm successful in my business, it's going to secure the time I want with my family. It's going to secure my family, but it's not creating security. It's actually creating a lot of suffering and pain when we are packing our schedule.
I absolutely love that, because what you're saying is it's almost like a look in the mirror when you audit your time. Yeah. When I was a personal trainer way back in the day, I think it was 19.
You've done everything.
I have. I shocked one of my bosses one time. She listens to the podcast, so she might get a chuckle out of this, but she had me come into one of her classes and I did this game where the class had to pick which careers I had not done. And I had done like 13 things on the board. And she's like, if I had known all that, I probably wouldn't have hired you.
That's awesome.
So, well, I know. But yeah, as a trainer, you know, just doing a food journal with my clients, because they're like complaining, I'm not losing weight, I'm not doing this, I don't have any energy. And I said, well, just start writing down what you eat. Don't change anything. Just start writing it down.
Right.
And don't even pay attention to it as you're writing it down. We'll go over it together. Just write it down.
Yeah.
And when you look at that after a week, kind of the same thing you're talking about, when you look at the schedule doesn't lie. When you write down what you've been doing with your time. In fact, one of the tools that I love and hate on my Apple iPhone is every Sunday I get this notification of my average screen time.
Oh yeah, that's great.
And we're sitting around because we haven't been going to physical church Sunday morning. We're watching church on TV with our family. And so we all get the same notification at the same time. And my kids always look down and go, oh my gosh, you were on your phone that much every day. And I go, yeah, I suppose I was. Wow. That's a gut check right there.
Yeah.
But by looking in the mirror, that's where we can start making change.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I absolutely love that one. What are some other tools that you found to be really handy for somebody starting out with this? I'm overwhelmed. I don't have enough time. My social life, relationships are suffering. My health is suffering, but I've got this, you know, great growing practice. You know, how do you help them transition to understanding success is not just a successful practice?
Yeah. I wish I could give everybody a pill that just worked with all this stuff, because it's an ongoing thing. So I'll give you a tool I talked about on Instagram today. So there's a concept called negativity bias, and our brain will always want to skew negative. It's also a facet of like a black and white thinking mindset. So either things are going really, really bad or they're going amazing, right? Like there's no in between. Either someone is totally wrong or they're completely right. There's no in between. It's the same thing. We see this in, you know, extremist views, right? Like you see like, no, this is the way to believe. And it's like, oh, this other way is to believe. It's just complete different opposite spectrums. So our brain, it has a tendency to do this. And so the first thing we have to do is just know that it's just our brain doing what it does. There's nothing wrong with it. That's just what it does. And to be very accepting of it, like don't like, you know, there's nothing that's gone wrong. And then notice the thoughts, like the thoughts that you get put out there were good ones. I should be doing more. I'll give you an example. So this week, I took this week off, right, from my law job. And I honestly had this idea that I would be spending a lot more time in my business. So this morning I was having thoughts like, oh, I should have done more for my business this week. I should have posted more on Instagram. I should have done more stories. I should have made more offers. I should have written another email. Oh, I didn't do this. I didn't do that. And I noticed it right away because I've practiced this so much. Like you won't notice this right away. It's a practice. I noticed, oh, my brain is like totally skewing negative right now. So interesting. And I asked myself, is that true? Like, is that really true that I didn't do enough? Because when I went over and questioned myself and made a list in my head of all the things I did do, right, to overcome this negativity bias, I had written posts. I had put little notes on, you know, my stories when I went to the Monterey Bay Aquarium this week. I posted something. I did a couple posts. I did put up a podcast. I did a 2-day event with my coach where I was totally up-leveling myself. And I know that's going to translate to helping my people. I did journal some, like I didn't journal as much as I quote unquote wanted to, but I did journal what I wanted to in that moment. And so when I had that opportunity to really question myself, it put me in a better frame of mind to say, no, I did do things. And the reason that's important for all of us to know is because when we make decisions from scarcity, when we make decisions from feeling bad about ourselves, we're going to make crappy decisions. Like there's no way around it. When you're making decisions from a place of not having, not being enough, you're going to make graspy offers to your clients. You are going to seem needy to your clients, right? Like you're not going to be in a space where you can make offers cleanly. But when you are in a space where you are fully abundant, you don't need anything from anyone, and you're in a place of service, then when you're making an offer, it really comes from a place of service. When you make a decision, it comes from a place of having rather than lack. And it always comes out better. Like when I talk to my clients about it, I call it the compass, right? It's like, we need a compass to get somewhere. Like if you want to have a successful business, then you've got to be really aware of how you feel when you are taking action. And if you are in a negative state and you are feeling down about things, you're feeling maybe some despair, overwhelm, frustration, and you're not questioning that and where it comes from and the thoughts that are creating it, any actions that you take are going to take you in the opposite direction of your goal. Any choices that you make from a place of abundance, a place of love, compassion, service, those commitment, all of those feelings, certainty, those are going to take you in the direction of the way you want to go towards growing your business or your life for that matter.
Man, that is fantastic. I love the mindset stuff. And it really is probably the hardest hurdle to overcome in any challenge.
Yeah. You know,
whether you're growing a business, whether you're trying to get healthy, you're going to beat yourself up.
Yeah. And you know, it doesn't go away, right? Like I still have these challenges, but what we do differently is like when we're practicing all of this is we get better at it. Like mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, lifting weights, you get stronger at it the more you do it. Mm-hmm. It's always a repetition.
Well, and for people that are, you know, sitting out there going, oh, well, you know, she's maybe not living this or anything like that. I think proof of that is that you're a full-time prosecutor. You've got a podcast going, you're coaching your clients, you're putting out content for that, and you're developing yourself. Do you actually get to kind of experiment with some of these life skills that you're putting out to your folks?
Oh my gosh, yeah. And you know what? You know, I want to say none of us have that perfection. Like so many of us who are ambitious have this belief that there's a perfection that we're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. And the best part of it is that we don't have to be perfect to help other people. We don't have to be perfect to grow our businesses. Like, and we can love ourselves and be good to ourselves right now without being perfect. Like I will tell all your listeners right now, I am not perfect. And I would be so boring if I was. Like my friends would hate me if I was perfect. So the fact that we all have these different facets of our personalities, the kind that, like, I love Star Trek Next Generation right now. I love sci-fi and fantasy. I will sit and I will watch some Netflix. I will binge on that. And I don't feel bad about it because I love that part of me, the part of me that's like, no, I'm just going to totally veg out right now. Mm-hmm. I didn't always love that part of me. I used to beat myself up and think that that was bad, that it was wrong, that I should be doing something else. Now I just carve out time for that because that's what I decide.
Yeah. That's awesome. Hey, I wish we could sit down and talk about this all day because this, I mean, all of these things that you're touching on are so important to everybody in every aspect of life. It's, and that's why you and I connected. And I thought, gosh, this is so relatable to everybody, not just attorneys. And I think attorneys are very fortunate to have you as a resource.
Thank you.
Do you work with attorneys all across the country, or is it just something that you do locally?
Yeah, I'm actually doing it all over the world right now. I've got a lawyer from Canada, from England. The people I'm working aren't even in California. They are all over the rest of the country, like Tennessee, Illinois. It's like everywhere else, New York. So yeah, it's been really great getting to meet people and get to know attorneys and different practices from all over the country and all over the world now. It's really great.
That's awesome. And where can people catch up with you if they're trying to get in connection with you?
You know, one of the best places to hang out with me is on Instagram. If you go to dina.cataldo, it's C-A-T-A-L-D-O. And I have stories and posts pretty much daily. And also the podcast, Be a Better Lawyer podcast. And then on the website, there's some free resources there, dinacataldo.com. But yeah, that's my world. I hang out on Instagram most of the time. So that's a fun place to be.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll add all those to the show notes if you missed any of that. And one question I always ask at the end is, what are the top three books in your personal library and why should everybody read them?
Yes, I will tell you what they are because I give them to my clients.
Okay.
So the first one that I like to start out my clients with is The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. It is, it's essential because we have these upper limits is how he describes them. And the upper limit is really the fear we were talking about, the resistance. And then he talks about how we can release that and how we can move through that. And then there's two books by, I have them right behind me, Stephen Pressfield. One is The War of Art and the other is Turning Pro. And The War of Art really talks about, you know, anyone who has a business, you're in the business of creativity. And Stephen Pressfield talks about this in the context of writing, but also in the context of anything you do in life, you will have the resistance. And so there's this war inside of us trying to create and get over people's judgments of us and our judgments of ourselves. Turning Pro is really the next step, the next level in up-leveling yourself so that you can serve the way that you want to serve.
Mm. Awesome. I feel much better about myself because I just bought The War of Art.
Sweet.
And so I'm getting ready to read that one on vacation, actually. So now I've got an advocate for the book telling me,
yes,
I need to read the book. Okay.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, that's so great. Any parting shots that you want to tell anybody out there?
Yeah. You know what? I want to say this for everybody who is building a business, who is beating themselves up because they think they should be doing something that they're not doing right now, is to know it's okay. Like, it's okay that you're not doing that thing right now. Like, take care of yourself. Everything else will follow. Mm. Like, you will be able to take care of everyone and everything around you better when you start taking care of yourself.
Fantastic advice. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a great conversation. I hope we continue them down the road.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody out there listening, thanks so much for tuning into the Next Peak podcast. If you have enjoyed what you have heard, please go to your favorite podcast platform, subscribe, share it with a friend. And if you're really, really ambitious and you want to help us out, leave us a review because we love to get those. Until next week, keep climbing your next peak.